Hello, and welcome to the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. This is a podcast dedicated to providing helpful insights from some of the industry's best and most respected leaders in the human capital space. I'm your host, Erica Ritchie, the Chief Client Officer at Audrey McGuckin Talent Solutions. And today we're joined by our CEO, Audrey McGuckin, along with Brett Larson, the Director of Talent Management and Analytics at Emerson, a 125-year Fortune 500 focused industrial company. So before we get started, Brett, why don't you share a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you, Erica. I appreciate the time today. And I joined Emerson about 8 years ago, and I've been holding a variety of talent leadership positions with the company, starting in the Middle East and Africa organization based out of Dubai, where I really cut my chops in both HR and learning and development. And then over time, I expanded to cover India, Middle East, and Africa for succession planning and leadership development and talent acquisition. And over the last few years, I've been at the headquarters for Emerson based out of St. Louis, Missouri. And here I run talent management, where we cover strategic talent acquisition, leadership development, succession planning, and then the talent analytics and system space. My background covers the luxury goods industries, the bank, retail banking industry in the U.S., as well as consulting and training. And I've had the fortunate experience of living and working across Europe, Asia, Middle East and Africa, and of course, the U.S. as well.
Wow, that's fantastic. Do you have a favorite country that you lived in?
You know, everybody asks me that. And if you ask me that, wherever I'm at the time is my favorite country that I've lived in. Every country has good things and bad things about it. The trick that I've learned is that you go in with a completely open mind and you learn along the way and understand that you know almost nothing when you get there, and do what the locals do, and you'll make a lot of good progress and a lot of good friends along the way.
Perfect. I love that style of adventure. That's how I like to go as well. Audrey, how about you tell us a little bit about how you and Brett know each other?
Yeah. You know, and Erica, I'm not sure if you know this story or not, but I've worked with David Weller, who's an industrial psychologist who lives in the same area in St. Louis as Brett. And David works quite closely with Brett. And Erica, you'll know that David and I work very closely with a lot of the work that we do in assessments and succession and leadership development. And so as part of the work that I do, I'm a program director for the Conference Board. And I had the honor of curating one of their largest conferences last year, the Succession Management Conference. And I said to David, what do you think? Who do you know in the industry that it's doing some really great work in this space? And he said, I think you have to have Brett there. And so Brett, you and I got connected. We yep. had a couple of calls. We laid out the plan, and we had the pleasure of meeting each other in New York City last year. And Brett did a really outstanding job of participating in a really critical component of the succession management workshop. But in addition, and this is always how things go. You know, we had a couple of people pull out. We had a couple of changes at the last minute, and as always, we have to hustle and get agile and figure things out. And so, you know, I said to Brett, I think it might have been 2 hours before it, Brett, could you be on a panel conversation?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. That was on diversity and inclusion, which is an important topic for Emerson and something I'm passionate about.
That's right. So, as I'm sure we know from Brett's sense of adventure and his travels around the world, he just jumped right in and he made it happen. And, you know, that was Brett, that was the top performing component of that conference, was that panel conversation on D&I. So thank you. And long story short, but that's how we met, Erica.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. And actually, if I think of that conference, Audrey, that was actually one of my biggest takeaways, was actually not only just being on that panel, but actually listening to the other panelists and really kind of taking a lot of lessons away from what they're doing and some good anecdotes and stories about how they're you know, challenging what they're working on, just like we are, which was really, really valuable.
That's great. You know, we have a couple of golden threads that when we're working with clients in that leadership development space that runs through them. And one of the most powerful ways of learning is learning from peers. And you were on that stage with a really neat bunch of peers. And you had an audience who had some great questions, and that was kind of just a really great moment where peer learning was flourishing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
All right, well, let's dive into this, shall we? So what we have found is that the biggest problem that our clients have is bridging the gap between their stated strategy and getting to the promised value of that strategy. We know that 9 out of 10 companies fail to execute their strategy, and that the majority of the time it comes down to leadership and talent. We also know that when you are developing talent leadership strategies, you have to connect it to the business strategy and to see really large impact. This is something that Emerson has really excelled in, but for Emerson, like most companies, it was a journey to strategy alignment. So I know our listeners would love to hear from you both on developing this type of work within a company of connecting the leadership strategy to the business strategy. So Brett, let's start with you. What are some of the specific challenges that Emerson has faced as they have began their journey?
You know, Erica, I think there's probably two main areas where we look at the challenges that we face. And the first is, you know, just the talent landscape. Obviously that changes significantly over time. And companies have to remain, you know, adaptive enough to address those, but also, you know, have vision for the future so they know what they're getting into in advance. And, you know, I think of those challenges that Emerson faces, I don't think these are necessarily unique to the company, but certainly something we address. You know, demographics is certainly something we're facing. We know that over the coming decade, we're going to face, you know, we're going to start the face of peak retirement in our leadership ranks. You know, it's ultra competitive for talent out there. That's something that we have to maintain and be at the forefront of. And, you know, the other side of this is actually just a practical one on the talent side. And that is that just the pure bandwidth of our company to spend time and attention and focus on connecting leadership to strategy is important because we're so busy helping our customers every day, which is our core purpose. And then, of course, speed. And speed is a challenge for us from the standpoint of you know, because of the markets shift and adapt, because companies shift and adapt, the geopolitics, all sorts of things factor in. Companies got to be able to turn on a dime, and leaders have to be able to do that. And so the business strategy can often change extremely quickly, but the people leading that need to be just as adaptable and change. And then the other side is, you know, a challenge that Emerson has is we just get in the way of ourselves sometimes, and where we actively address that. You know, when we think about how Emerson over the last few years has repositioned itself in the marketplace, you know, that opens up opportunities for structural changes. And in doing that, that's how you address the challenges that maybe previously wouldn't have been looked at because they were kind of legacy or they were sacred. But you know, those types of opportunities that the company's history presents offers us a chance to realign our leadership as well. And so I think the challenges are both on the talent specific side, but also just how companies structure themselves and prioritize leadership and the connection to strategy.
That's great. Audrey, what are some of the other challenges that you're seeing as we work with our clients?
Yeah, I mean, I think, Brett, you did a really nice job touching on a number of those. And one thing that struck me when you were talking, Brett, is the business challenges and the leadership challenges are intertwined. And it's very rare that you can separate those. And so what we're seeing a lot with our other clients is that they're inextricably linked, and you have to go with that. The other thing that we're seeing is this notion of speed of change and the agility of leaders. One of the things we know for sure is that change is a constant. And the world that we live in today, we know that change is fast. So when you have constant, fast change, you need to have pretty agile leaders. And we believe that there's a way to develop fast, agile leaders. And it's part of the work that we do with our other clients. So really, those were the two things that struck me, Erica.
Well, Brad, I'm going to turn it back over to you. When thinking through some of these challenges, and how are you and how's Emerson tackling these? What have been some of your approaches in the last year?
Yeah, you know, actually, we kind of stick to some tried and true methodologies for the company that have really worked for us over many decades of success. But those become, you know, acutely important, especially over the last 12 months, or even if I look at the next 12 or the next 18, next 24. And, you know, the first thing for us is we use our management process itself to actually generate our leadership development and to generate our future leaders. And so everything we try to do around leadership development is ultimately to put our leaders in those experiences that require them to adapt and change. There's a lot of ways to go about leadership development. We personally have the philosophy that if we look at how we run our company, which is what we call the Emerson Management Process, if we look at that and we put people in the key strategic roles, it will require them to adapt and change and meet and raise to the challenge. The process itself is something we've been running for many years, many decades, and it generates our continuous success over time. And leaders naturally come out of that. So that's something. That's one way we address it, is we trust our leadership process that it will put you in situations and opportunities that requires you to step up to reach your full potential. That's part of it. The other thing we rely on is leaders teaching leaders. You know, I think that there's a lot of great initiatives by many companies out there around, in the technology space and, you know, individual curation of development opportunities. We find that a leader looking another leader in the eye and helping them get through situations or helping them develop through programs, that's a critical component that you can't lose out on. So when times are tough in terms of bandwidth, and there's a lot of priorities being pulled on all our leaders at the same time, making time where there's one-on-one connections with leaders, as well as our leaders spending time with the next generation of leaders, helps us address that. It helps pass the torch and pass the baton on. And then the last thing I mentioned in my challenge is sometimes, you know, our own organizational structure can be a challenge to Emerson. And so what we do is we've really realized over the last 12 to 18 months the importance that there are things we can do as Emerson as a whole company that we can't do as individual business units or individual locations. And when I look at the 85,000 plus people we have around Emerson today, we've got great talent, great people everywhere in the world. And if we look at it as Emerson talent and Emerson leaders, not just as, you know, people from a particular part of our business or a particular business line or even in a location, all of a sudden we have a huge resource and a huge talent pool that we can tap. So getting out of the way of our own internal structure helps us look at talent more holistically. And I say that almost from a competitive perspective as well, because I know that my competition that's trying to peel off my best talent, they're not saying which business unit is this person in or which location. They're looking at that's good Emerson talent. They've been in the automation space or the commercial residential space for decades. They're the best in the industry. I don't care which business unit they work with. I care that they're coming from Emerson. And so I need to take the same competitive nature that my competition is trying to peel away my talent and apply that inside the company.
So it sounds like three things from your perspective. This notion of, you know, trusting your process, which is really the blueprint, and how you've Emerson have laid that out. And the second piece is leaders teaching leaders, which I thought was interesting. We've done a lot of work with clients where they're very, very new in the journey, and quite a number of years behind Emerson from a maturity perspective. And so there's just some organizations where leaders teaching leaders is an easier strategy than in some organizations. And with those other organizations that are less mature, how we're working with them is really around this notion of first work on yourself before you can work on others. And so I think the big thing that you and I have also talked about, Brett, is relevance. So mm-hmm. Where are organizations in their maturity curve? What is their leadership capability today? Therefore, these are the right strategies. I mean, one of the things that Emerson's known for is your management process. It's just industry known, and it's widely known, and it's ingrained. And in fact, I told this story when we met in New York City that I used to work for a company called Jabil, and I think it might have been 15 years ago, or maybe even more, when Jabil was first looking at the work they were doing in the talent and leadership space, the CEO said, "Oh, I just don't know how we're going to figure this out. Let's make a field trip. You know, I know the CEO at Emerson. Let me call him and see if we can go up there and just see how they do it." And so you guys were just known for that. And we actually use that in our leadership journeys, and we put a label on it now, which is immersion. So yeah. Really, that was the immersion experience for the Jabil leadership team, was to go and see how Emerson did it. Now, when we went there at the time, and a lot of the things that we took away were somewhat easy to implement, but some things were just too far away because, you know, you had decades ahead of us in terms of where you are in the journey. And so I think it matters where you are in the journey.
Yeah. And, you know, the other side of that, Audrey, is that it sounds cliched, but the reality is it's not, you know, in the end, this is not about something that we just do. It's really who we are, right? I mean, it's not like it's on a checklist for us to make sure to spend time on it. It's just part of how we operate. And I think being part of the management process is, you know, that's advice I would give any organization that's either starting on a journey or looking a new direction on their journey, which is, you know, think about, you know, who you are as a company, what resonates most from your leadership perspective, and find ways to make that an ingrained part of just your mode of operation. It's not something extra. And again, that's easy to say on a, you know, on the call today, but ultimately it comes down to the actions that leaders take every day, right? I mean, every single day, leaders are role models, whether they want to be or not. Everybody's looking to them. And if that's seen that they're taking the actions, actually making decisions and putting their time and their energy and their effort behind it, that's contagious in a very positive way. And that will carry on. And over time, you know, that will generate the way business is done, as opposed to just something we're trying to work on or something we're trying to do.
Yeah, I just love that notion of authenticity, because you can't fake this stuff. And, you know, we have a rule in the firm where we just don't want to work with clients that are checking the box, or they are just doing it because somebody told them to do it and they don't really believe in it, because we want to really work with clients who are okay with saying who we are. And who you are is different for every organization. But having that authenticity can be really inspiring for the employees that you surround yourself with. So I love that you put that on the table. And Brett, you also put on the table one of the things that I'm always yakking on about, which is, I mean, you called it role models, and I call it this piece around the fish rots from the head. You know, if the leaders at the top of the house can't be role modeling how we do things around here because it's who we are, then people can smell that really quickly. And you just don't get to the levels of engagement that you're trying to get to, because ultimately we're not doing this because we think it's a neat thing to do. We're not doing it because it's what we've been trained in. We're actually doing the work we do because we believe that it can have an impact on performance. We believe it can have an impact on strategy. And so what we're trying to get to is the discretionary effort. How do you get employees to go above and beyond? How do you get employees to go the extra mile? And how do you get employees to be inspired? And you can't fake that stuff.
No, you can't. And you know, it's not formulaic, right? It's not there's not a simple equation to that. There's obviously a lot of things that we can learn and do and experience over time that'll help us get there. But it's got to be something that's committed to, and something that's really driven by an intrinsic desire to be a leader. It's interesting, you know, oftentimes in leadership programs or even just leadership development efforts, the question, a very simple question, is forgotten to be asked in that leadership journey. And that is, why do you want to be a leader? And, you know, if people can't answer that, especially when you get to, let's say, the mid-level leadership or certainly into some of the higher level leadership, if they can't answer authentically, why do you want to be a leader? And there's some, you know, some purpose behind that, some meaning behind that. Then again, that authenticity won't come through. It's so rare is it, you know, I mean, people might, if they're being candid with themselves, they might say, well, I want it because it's up, you know, higher level leader in the company. There's money and there's comp and there's title behind it. And they might not say that to others. They might say that to themselves inside their head. You know, that'll show through ultimately in their ability to lead people. But if you get to the senior positions in companies of any size, that authenticity shows through because they know why they want to be a leader and they know what type of leader they want to be. And that's not, that's a constantly evolving answer over the course of a career, but it definitely is something that's so critical to constantly be asking leaders and make sure that they're on that journey.
Well, can we ask you, why do you want to be a leader?
Yeah, I tell you what, I just like I like seeing people, to Audrey's point, give the discretionary effort. I get a personal, intrinsic, motivational high. I leave the room with that rush. I get that feeling in my stomach and in my chest when I have worked with people and they are leaving that interaction inspired, whether it's because of them proving to themselves something they couldn't do before, or whether it's something that we thought we could get to, you know, a level of, you know, level two, but we got to level five because we completely blew out of the water what our expectations were. You know, I'm a type of leader that I like to think big, and sometimes that's a detriment because I lose some of the details, but I like to think big. And that's so much fun. And leading people through the journey of, you know, what does, what can the future look like? That's why I like being a leader. And actually our leadership development efforts over the last few years have really pointed to that. You know, when we reorganized our company, we found that we had 15 different high potential programs. And, you know, the question we asked ourselves wasn't how do we organize leadership development? The question I got to ask, and this is a question that I posed to the whole Talent Council of Emerson, is what does leadership development look like for a $30 billion Emerson? That's a big, fascinating question, and it created a whole opportunity for us to think big and different. And being the person that can inspire that kind of thought, that's what really excites me. That's what gives me my leadership rush, and that's what I enjoy doing.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks for sharing, Brett. And a lot of the work that we do with our clients is of course, why do you want to be a leader? But the question that comes before that is who are you as a leader? And you know, it's back to this notion of first work on yourself before you can work on others. And I think, you know, it's fascinating. Each time we have, a guest speaker on our podcast, this notion of journey comes up. And it's, I think most people in the space who are really putting a lot of thought and brain power to this, they're thinking about their work as a journey. It's really about building bridges and, you know, how can we get to the next phase? What does that look like? You said Emerson looked and you had 14 high potential programs and part of your journey was to do this next thing. And so it's the evolution and allowing people to emerge as leaders and come along in that journey alongside you that I think is pretty cool.
And one of the things that I love that we get to do as a firm is helping people know where to start and helping them know not just what are pieces you can drop into this that could be impactful, but when do you pull on which lever and where do you place these things to really have the highest impact. And sometimes it might mean it's going to feel like we're starting slow to then be able to go fast or something like that. But I think that has been some of the most inspiring pieces as, you know, we're talking about why do we want to be a leader. As we've worked with clients, Audrey, some of the things that I have loved and that I have found the most joy in working with others and leading them through this process is helping them have those aha moments and helping them take something that's so complex and feels so overwhelming to them and be able to say like, okay, hold on. This is what we know. This is what we see. This is what can make an impact. And we know what questions to ask to help them get their minds moving and get their minds thinking. And I will come out of conversations like those feeling so full of energy, even though it might have been a 4-hour conversation that can feel draining or a 1-hour conversation that could drain someone else. For us, I feel like it breathes life into my soul to help people see where to go next. And it's some of the most inspiring pieces of work that we get to do as an organization, and I love being a part of. So, all right, a couple more questions. We're going to switch gears a little bit. Brett, how do you measure the ROI on this kind of investment in your strategy journey?
Yeah, you know, we get that question a lot when we talk with other companies about leadership development and linking leadership and strategy. And, you know, I always kind of go back to the same answer, and that is that we actually don't measure ROI. We kind of have the philosophy that you're not going to get to a monetary ROI type of approach on this. But I'll tell you how I do measure the success of this is the fact that I mentioned earlier a philosophy of ours is leaders teaching leaders. And the moment that dries up for me, meaning I can't ask leaders to help teach other leaders or engage them in our programs or in our mentorship or our coaching, that means that we're not doing the right things. So the fact that all the leaders in Emerson, all the way up to our CEO and our C-suite, the fact that they are devoting a lot of time to this means that they believe in it, and it means that they view that there's a return on the investment there. So the fact that they're committed to it and they're doing it, to me, that means that I'm hitting my ROI. Obviously, Emerson's a company with continuous improvement. We always get feedback and we drive things forward on all of our processes. So that's one thing. But I mean, that if you want to talk numbers, it does show up in things like the depth of our succession plans and the connections that we make across the businesses and how easy it is for us to place talent, those types of things. So I know all those are positive for Emerson, but the reality is if I got leaders saying, yep, I'm engaged, I'm going to help out, or people even raising their hand or saying, when can I get in next to help other leaders or help develop the future leaders, ROI is good on our efforts.
Brett, I think just to join it back to something you said earlier, where you said that the work that you do with Emerson is not necessarily formulaic. And I think this notion of ROI can be like that as well, right? We're all trained early on in our careers for it to seem like it's formulaic, the ROI. But I think the magic happens when the organization says, we just know that this is the right thing to do. Yeah, we're going to put some metrics in place, but these are the types of things that we see. These are the types of things that we feel. These are the types of things that we observe in our environment, and we know it's working. And you've done a really nice job of saying, you know, when we get a cadre of leaders that can teach other leaders, then we know we're making a ton of progress. You know, when we can move leaders across business units and they get to high performing really quickly, we know that we've done the right thing. So it's back to this notion of, yes, we can all go ahead and put the numbers on it in level 1 through level 4, but what are those other things that you see in the environment and you feel that are tangible that you can also put your finger on? And I think that was just a really nice way of saying that and sharing that with our listeners, Brett.
Yeah, you know, I think in the conference we spent some time together back in November, Audrey, I think I did share some information. You know, Emerson, ultimately, if we look at our succession over decades, the fact that we have been able to continually develop, you know, value for our shareholders decade after decade after decade. You know, we have over 60 years of continued dividend increases, which is one of just a handful of companies. What that means in the backdrop of all that, of course, is that we have successfully handed this company from one generation of leaders to the next over a very long time period. And that in and of itself, and the ultimate measure of succession and leadership development is going to be your P&L in terms of the continuity of it over time. I mean, if you want to get to the numbers of it, and then because you can't isolate one training or one workshop or one program or one item. So you got to kind of put it all together. And if you consistently have leaders that can take over from the previous generation and do a better job than the group that they did before, then that's ultimately success.
Brett, what's on the horizon and what do you see in the future for Emerson as you continue to invest in this space?
You know, I think that on our horizon, there's a couple things that I would say. First of all, we will continue to do what we do best. And that is some of the things I already mentioned, the one thing I would add to our approach to leadership development that I would want to make sure that we continue to do and find new and different ways to do it is that when we bring people through our management process or through our programs, it's a lot of it is about creating connections. It's about, you know, everybody knowing each other. And if I think 2-3 generations down the company in terms of leadership, what are we doing today to enable them to connect with each other early in career and kind of progress through their leadership careers or their leadership journeys together, kind of across the company? You know, technology is allowing you to do that in a lot of ways. But if you think about it, all the people that are going to make the decisions to make Emerson successful in the years, you know, 2030 to 2050 or 2050 to 2070, you know, they're establishing relationships today. And the better we do at finding opportunities to make that happen, either through, again, technology, community, internal communities, through programs, through opportunities to work together, they can then, you know, have those relationships, not just because they got a new job and now they have new colleagues, but they've been working together around the company globally for a very long time. And I think that's a critical component. So that's, you know, making connections and finding new ways to do that's a part of it. I do think that companies, given the nature of learning and the nature of consumption of information today, we all have an opportunity to find ways to remove barriers to getting access to information and learning opportunities. So I think there is a technology play in there and finding ways to have, you know, micro learning and those types of things. You know, that will be important to enable that. And I think that I see that a lot more, especially on some of our technical leadership side, where we have proprietary industry knowledge that needs to be passed on between leaders and as they progress in their careers. So I think that's going to be something that's on the horizon. But it all boils back down to what we've talked about so far, is how well are we bringing in, generating leaders and creating opportunities for them to experience new and different things, and not taking our foot off the gas on moving people and giving them those new jobs. I mean, that's just, it's a fundamental thing, and I don't think that will change in the future.
Yeah, I love that, Brett. And I don't want to put words in your mouth, but a lot of the work that we do is really around how do you leverage technology, but don't lose sight of the people side, and that's really being what we call human-centered. And what you've really talked about is, you know, how do we help people make connections on a personal, humanistic way, but at the same time leverage technology? So I think that's beautiful.
Well, Audrey, for some of our listeners, they may be feeling like this is 100 years away for them, and how do they even know where to start to get to where Emerson Inn is, as they've had so much time and generation after generation of investment in this, as Brett has said. So what can you say to that? How can people know where to start?
What I would say is, let's find the point where either there's the biggest pain, or let's find a place in the organization where there's a leader who really cares, and there's a leader who is willing to take the first step. So normally when we work with organizations, we'll say, where's your biggest pain point, or where do you have a leader that's really invested in this? Let's prototype, let's experiment, let's start small. And, you know, it's back to what Brett said. It's not a copy paste. What works for Emerson won't always work for another organization. So let's work together and experiment to find out what's going to work best for you, knowing in the background that here's all of the things that you can choose and select from. So that would be my starting point.
All right. Well, with that, I would like to thank both of you for your time and for your openness and for sharing the journeys that you guys have been on. And thank you to our listeners for joining in on this episode of the Audrey McGuckin Leadership Podcast. We will see you guys soon.